Well, folks, like most industries, agriculture seems to have reached a fork in the road, with one fork heading toward the big and industrial, the other fork heading toward the small and local. For direction, we turn to the great Yogi Berra, who said, "When you get to a fork in the road, take it." And so today we ask, what do we want the future to serve for dinner? Big and industrial or small and local?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 970th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Melbourne who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Aaron Shore on the board. Aaron?
Yes.
I have an assignment for you.
Uh-oh.
I want you to search the internet for the food product called Soylent, S-O-Y-L-E-N-T, and tell me if it's real or if it's a practical joke.
Okay.
All right. And do that while we're introducing the show here. Folks, I received notification of a new food product a couple of weeks ago that gave me cause to pause. The food is called Soylent, and in fact was named after a fictional Soylent Green, a food manufactured from recycled human remains. This Soylent has to be a joke, I thought. Who in their right mind would name their food product after Soylent Green? Soylent simply can't be for real, can it? Whether Soylent is a real product or a very elaborate practical joke, it does point to a direction in which food manufacturing industry seems to be heading. In fact, agriculture, like all industries, seems to be heading in one of two directions. One direction on the road to the future appears to be down the road of industrialization, consolidation, and centralization. Along this road, farms grow into giant corporations governed by a government of the governed. Monsanto Corporation's Michael Taylor implementing the nation's Food Safety Modernization Act. Generally speaking, the processed foods produced by industry are uniform, predictable, and safe, at least most of the time. The other fork on the road to the future appears to be down the road of local, fresh, and decentralization. Along this road, farmers stay small by using space-intensive technologies to produce foods for their community that are fresh, unique, and interesting. Generally speaking, however, local farmers lack the economies of scale to participate in the government of the governed, and so must rely on their community for both governance and support. There we have it, what appears to be the fork in the road to our future. Today we aim to take that fork and so ask, what do we want the future to serve for dinner? Big and industrial or small and local? Who better to ask than the people who are looking into the future as we speak? So today we're featuring the two young ladies who have served as the interns, producers here at the Food Chain Radio program for the last quarter, both of whom are young mothers, both of whom are students of environmental studies graduating from the University of California, and both of whom have been working as journalists here on the Food Chain Radio program. Start with Kristen Carlson. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you've been a researcher, a co-host, a host, and now you're the guest on the Food Chain. So kind of running the gamut. What have you learned by being a student journalist that you didn't learn as a student at the University of California?
So much. It's added on a layer, a dimension to what I've been taking in at the university. Just putting so many things into context, like, for example, buying local, eating local. There was a lot of reasons why I believe in that, and, you know, economy, nutrition of food, and this and that. But, for example, then we bring in Daphne Miller to talk about the soil and the local microbes in the soil. And all of a sudden, it's just another little piece to this puzzle to confirm what I already believed, you know.
Oh, well, there you go. Also with us, Anna Ringelman. Anna.
Good morning.
Good morning. You too have been a researcher, a co-host, a host, and now you're the guest, the guest expert. So what have you learned by being a student journalist that you didn't learn as being a student?
I think the largest, I would say the largest takeaway from the show for me, from the whole process, has been the extreme interconnectedness of everything. I think that all the guests we've had, Kristen, myself, you, we all have very different issues surrounding food and the environment that are very dear to us. A lot of them are connected. We share a lot of them. But they're all looking into this big picture, which I think within academia, it's very easy to focus on your focus area. Mine is ecology, conservation biology. It's very easy to get narrowed into that is what you do. You are whatever this certain aspect of what you're studying is, rather than looking at the whole picture and how we know it's all very, very interconnected. As Kristen said, you have Daphne Miller looking at the soil. We have all these different people who are looking at things, and it's all one big picture. And in order to get to the local food we want, the organic food, the food that's not filled with heavy metals and toxins, we really all need to recognize that we're working together, essentially.
Well, there you go. Well, cool. Folks, that's our future talking to you right there. And you're invited to talk with them today. So here on the Food Chain, so you can just pick up your phones and dial 800-624-2665 or 831-479-1080. And we're going to talk to these young ladies about the foods they want to eat in the future, that we want their families to eat. First, we're going to turn to engineer Aaron Shore, and we're going to see if this Soylent stuff is real or is it a practical joke.
It is real as far as existence, but it is not an actual food. It is a food substitute.
It's a food substitute.
And it is comprised of maltodextrin, rice protein, oat flour, canola and fish oil, and raw chemical powders.
Oh, really? That's yes. My favorite, raw chemical powders. That's what I like best. So then it is real.
It is indeed. It is indeed. And the gentleman whom created it, Rob Reinhardt, claims that it can be produced at $5 per day.
So we could eat for $5 a day?
Yes. And according, at least as of now, the FDA says that it is safe, whatever that means.
And you say, and who's running the FDA?
Monsanto.
Exactly.
There you go, folks. Well, ladies, there it is. Soylent is real. And think about it. It's easy. You take it out of a package and you pour it into a blender and add water and turn the blender on, and there's your meal. Don't have to go shopping. Don't have to butcher any chickens. Don't have to put up with any grocery stores or parking lots. Don't have to put up with a big dirty kitchen. You can feed your family in 5 minutes. What's not to like? Kristen?
Well, one thing that I think about when I think of that is, what's really the difference between that and the processed cereals that we already have offered to us on the shelves? You know, it's a combination of chemicals and processed ingredients and scientists working to get this texture and flavor right. But I mean, it's not living food by any means that you're getting in, you know, most of the boxes of cereals, unless you're getting whole grains in the cereal or granola or something like that, you know. So I think we are already consuming and buying products that are much like Soylent, just not as in your face about being a food substitute. It's sold as being food.
Anna, it's so easy. It just pour it in a blender and hit the on, and there it is, and you can feed your family. What's not to like?
It does. It sounds very convenient, but I think that we would lose just, there's what Kristen just said, but also we would lose so much of the diversity that we have just as humans. You have so many different ethnic foods, and there's all these different things that have really important meanings for us, and we would lose all of that. You wouldn't have a special celebratory dinner. You wouldn't be making dinner with friends and family.
Well, wait a minute. You could still do that.
We could all mix it. We could each have a blender, and we could pour it in our blender at the same time.
Okay, on the count of three, everybody hit the on button, right? But it is easy. And it's a food that everybody could have, and there would be no messy agriculture. There would be no messy... I mean, FedEx could deliver it, be in charge of your food. It's so simple. Do you think it's a joke, or do you think it's serious? Soylent. Why would anybody name their food Soylent?
I don't know.
It has to be a joke.
Yeah, it has very negative connotations. So.
What do you think, folks? Is Soylent real, or is it a fake? And furthermore, and most importantly, what do you want the future to serve up for dinner? Do you want it to serve up the big and the industrial? Or do you want it to serve up the local and fresh? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Hey, I just saw where you can get $2 off on Frosted Flakes at Costco.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city greenbelts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at metrofarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at metrofarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at metrofarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at metrofarm.com. That's metrofarm.com.
What about it out there? What do you want the future serving up for dinner? How about that, some of that brand new Soylent stuff? Aaron, how do they keep that stuff fresh?
For two things. They use methyl sulfonyl methane as a preservative, and Reinhardt, who founded the product, also realized when he first made it he was suffering from joint pain, so he added this ingredient to address the problem. It is also used as a dietary supplement and is a carbon source. It can be found in the marine areas in plants and is found distinctively in human melanoma cells.
Uh-huh, melanoma cells, that's good. And he puts that in the... This has to be a joke. Is Soylent a joke? What do you think out there, folks? The spelling is Soylent. And it was named, well, quite openly, after Soylent Green. And it is a food of the future. You pour it in a blender, pour some water in, and you turn it on, and there's your food. It's complete. It has everything you need to grow strong and be healthy. Is that the kind of food you want to serve your children? We're asking that to Kristen Carlson and Anna Ringelman, who are the student interns here at the Food Chain Radio Program, graduating seniors, moving on into the world, going to go out there. But are you going to feed your children Soylent, Kristen?
No, I'm going to feed my children whole, organic, fresh, local, if possible, foods.
Anna?
Yes, this definitely local, organic, just things that still look like food, where mm-hmm. they're identifiable as this is an apple, not some powder where you don't know exactly where the ingredients are from or, you know, how it's made.
You know, we were talking about this new food, Soylent, and I think Kristen made the remark, gee, it's a lot like everything that's on the shelves. It's kind of like Frosted Flakes. In many respects, it's just that it's a powder and you add water mm-hmm. instead of adding milk. But that does seem to be an industrial model to which our food chain is headed. And the other direction is toward the small and local, and that seems to be what you ladies are pointing at. But why? Why are you pointing in this direction of the small and local? For Kristen?
Small and local, you can trace it back to your farmer, like you say, food with your farmer's face on it, so that you know what kind of practices are going on the farm. But also because you know, food is what is the building blocks for our body. You are what you eat, and if we're getting local, then we're getting the nutrients right away, as to where if you're buying from a long distance and it gets refrigerated, for example, I went on a field trip to a berry farm here in Watsonville, and they sell, you know, all kinds of berries, and blueberries is one of them, and they grow them in Chile for part of the year. And so to get it from Chile to here, it has to be refrigerated for 19 days on a boat before it hits our store shelves. And although it is preserved, you know, to a certain amount due to the refrigeration and everything, just when I heard that, it hit me, and it rang wrong, you know. It's just like, these berries, they got picked, I want them fresh, I want them right off the vine when the nutrients are still pumping in, the enzymes are still alive. That is what helps to keep our bodies thriving, I believe.
And I heard something Kristen say, I want to know if you feel the same way, and there was an element of trust lacking in foods that come a long distance. Do you not trust foods that come from long distances?
Well, especially for listeners who have listened to some of our past shows where we've been talking about soil pollution, we've been talking about organics imported from China, I think it really is a concern. You want to know where your food is coming from. And furthermore, in addition to that, you want to invest in your community and in making your community be able to function locally. When we're supporting these huge international companies, and we don't know how the food is being grown, it's being grown, you know, in China and other countries, it's really just holistically you're not supporting your body, you're not supporting your community.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you were brought up another element in addition to trust. You brought up the economic element, but I'd like to go back to the element of trust. Is it possible to trust food that comes from a long distance, like, for example, China? Is it possible? What safeguards do you see in forcing our ability to trust food that comes from a place like China?
Well, I think that supporters of the USDA and the FDA would say that there are governmental agencies that have oversight and are protecting us. But I think in recent shows, talking with, you know, Patty Lavera from the Food and Water Watch, we've seen that oversight is not nearly as large as we would hope it would be. It's a very, very small percentage of the imported foods that are being examined.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, what about you? What elements do you see guaranteeing that we should be able to trust foods that come from long distances?
I think money and power is sort of it has shifted our system so that, you know, that those agencies are holding hands with a lot of the corporations that are producing our food. And so that means that policy gets passed in favor of how, you know, large, you know, corporations want it to go. And even people going from working for these corporations to working in these government positions and back and forth and back and forth. So
if like you're, Michael Taylor at the Food and Drug Administration, right?
Exactly. So if you're looking for protection for us and for good decision making based on what's right and integrity of health and environment and all of those things, there's such a huge conflict of interest going on financially with the government and with the corporations. And I think, to me, it's very clear that those decisions aren't being made in our best interest. But,
you know, for people of my generation, the boomers, probably one of the seminal events of our history was the Watergate break-in and all of the, you know, catastrophic news that followed that whole thing. But probably the most famous person to come out of that whole Watergate situation was an anonymous person named Deep Throat. And he was giving information to the reporters who were trying to figure out who was doing what to whom. And Deep Throat said, "Follow the money." And that's all you had to do, was follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
where's the money? If you were to follow the money, what would you see, Anna?
Well, I would say that the money is going to a very small percentage of people. It's, you know, the people who own these huge companies, and also it's, you have to follow the commodity chain and look at what all the different industries, because you have, you know, you have these companies that are selling us the food, but you also have transportation companies for whom it's in their best interest to make sure that we're still, you know, we're still importing food from far away, so they are still making profit. They don't want it to be local.
And what about the, going back to, we have a couple of minutes before the break, but I'd like to pick up that notion of the money and its impact on the local economy. If you were, for example, to go over to the Central Valley of California, I guess we'll have to pick it up after the break, but let me put the question on the table to consider for the break. If you were go to any of the small towns in America's heartland, you would probably see a lot of boarded up shop windows, simply because those small towns of rural America have lost the economic, the economies of that local agriculture. It has been become industrialized. The people in it have been taken off the land and moved into town. So when we look at the kind of food that we want to have in our future, we look out into the countryside and we don't see the farmers there anymore. So who's going to grow the food, and how are they going to grow it when we get back? This is The Food Chain. Holy smokes, we're back. So the question is whether we're going to eat Soylent for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or are we going to move on and look for some fresh local food? And if we do look for that fresh local food, who in the heck's going to grow it? We've depopulated the heartland of people and replaced them with these large industrial tracts of corn and soybeans, and essentially we've moved all the people in town. So who's going to grow us this food? Kristen?
Well, we could maybe grow some of our own food. And
do you grow any of your own food?
I do, yeah. Yeah. I just started this year.
Uh-huh.
And it's been wonderful. I mean, I haven't had to buy salad mix for the summer so far, the spring. So I really enjoy it. My kids enjoy it. They love going out and like tending the garden and watering. And
Do you pay them to catch snails?
No, I don't. Uh-huh. I don't have many snails, luckily.
You will.
Yeah.
If you have tender greens to eat, you will have snails. Anna, where are we going to get the food that we're looking for here?
I think that's kind of goes back to the supporting your community. So if you, you know, it's you can say that you want local as much as you want, but if you're not supporting your local farmers and making it clear that you're going to buy from them and that they can, you know, this is a viable way for them to make a living, because obviously that is something that they need to, they do need to feed themselves and their families. And I think it's really a wonderful thing when we can make that work, where everyone, we can get the local food that we want and these farmers can succeed. And when these farmers succeed, other people, I know a lot of other students at UCSC who are focusing in agroecology, and what they want is to go into farming, and they want to help change things and bring it back to doing things in a way that works with the ecosystem and with natural processes instead of using chemicals. So I think we really just need to support these people.
Well, speaking of supporting people, let's go to the phones. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Let me ask you folks out there, what kind of food should these young ladies be feeding their families in the future? Should it be food from those large industrial concerns that make such great things as Soylent and Frosted Flakes and stuff like that? Or should they be looking to fresh local foods? That's the question on the table today. Let's ask Dan what he thinks. Dan, welcome to The Food Chain.
Well, thank you, Michael. Local.
Uh-huh. Fresh and local. Where the heck are they going to get it, Dan?
Just as Kristen said, a lot of young kids are heading in this direction. I'm so proud. I'm getting old. And
don't fess up to it, Dan. Whatever you do, never admit to it.
I hope. I've known Michael for about 20 years. I'm so proud to know him. I've listened to talk radio all my life. And I've learned so much from KSCO. And Kristen and Aaron, I hope. I'm so proud of you both. I never miss the food chain. I hope you can stay local and keep staying on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
so,
thank you.
Dan, where are these young ladies going to get their food? How are they going to do it? They're looking for the fresh. They're looking for the local. But
well, are you kidding? It's all over Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. What about the rest of the world? What about our friends that are listening in, like, in Kansas?
Oh, I'm sorry for them.
Why? Kansas has great growing conditions. Why can't they grow food in Kansas?
Well, I misspoke. We all can. But I feel sorry for them that the big ag has taken all the small farms away and the grain mills and the silos. It's just a shame. You mentioned it.
Well, let me ask you then, Dan. Do you think Soylent is real?
Do you remember what year that came out?
Well, this isn't Soylent Green. This is Soylent.
No. I mean the movie.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Because that was in my early days of pot smoking, and that had such a nauseating impact on me. That was a great movie. I mean, the bucket loader.
Uh-huh. So, but can you imagine naming your food product after Soylent Green? It has to be a joke, doesn't it? Or does it?
Well, besides your show, there are a lot of other shows on KSCO that are very significant. Ben Fuchs was on this morning.
Uh-huh.
And Perspectives, Dr. Stan's on.
Well, there's a lot of people that don't listen to this particular radio station, Dan, so kind of keep it in general terms here. There are a lot of people who are saying a lot of things about this, but do you think, can you imagine naming your product that you designed and manufactured after Soylent Green?
No.
It has to be a joke, doesn't it?
Seems to be.
Thank you very much for the call, Dan. Really appreciate it. Folks, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking with student interns Kristen Carlson and Anna Ringelman about where we're going to eat, from what kind of food the future is going to provide us to eat. Looking down the road, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, when your children are grown up and have their children and their children have children, what are they going to be eating? What do you think, Kristen?
Well, I hope and I have a vision for us having worked out all the kinks that we're going through right now. We're sort of like in this...
There's a fork in the road, isn't there?
There's all kinds of forks in the road, not just with food, with all kinds of stuff going on. And I hope that by the time my great-grandchildren are alive, that they're able to look back and say, wow, that was really... hardcore, but we made it through and we got to this point where we've figured out how to have these sustainable functional systems that benefit our bodies and benefit the environment. And local food, I believe, is integral in that.
And that's one of the things, that universities teach kids these days is the need for sustainability. How do you see this issue working out with respect to food? It seems like that we are truly at a fork in the road. And in one direction, things are headed toward very big and very industrial, like Soylent or Frosted Flakes or what have you. And the other is toward this local. In the competition for the consumer dollar, how on earth is that local going to compete in a marketplace that is so owned by the money?
Well, I think in past decades throughout history, we've seen that frequently it's young people who are able to change things. And I think that right now, more than ever, young people are demanding that they want local.
Okay.
Sorry, the music started playing. But so I think it's really just a question of – making sure that we are demanding what we think is the best for us, and that, you know, it's...
Let the world take care of itself.
We'll have to fight for it, and it's just whatever we end up doing in our careers in whatever little way, if we're all trying, and if we're teaching our children so that they know the things that we are learning.
Teach your children well. Okay, folks, what do you think out there? Do you think that these young ladies will be able to feed their children fresh and local? Or do you think these young ladies will be forced to feed their children the industrial and the packaged? 831-479-1080-800-624-2665. Anna, you heard the music. You're becoming a journalist. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here with Kristen Carlson, Anna Ringelman, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Do you think these young ladies will be able to find the food they want to eat in the future? Or do you think they will be forced to eat the food they don't want to eat in the future? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Got to ask you, ladies, you know, you look at this fork in the road, you down Run Road, you see the industrial food systems that's where all the money is. And the money is consolidated in the hands of a few who are big enough and have the economies of scale sufficient to be able to buy the government. Or buy whatever they want, essentially. Now, do you think that industrial model wants you to eat what you want to eat, that fresh and local? Anna?
Definitely not. Just as anything in capitalism, you want to keep expanding, you want to grow. You know, it's you have to make profit for your investors, so based on that model, it's just they want to keep growing, and the only way to keep growing is to keep getting more and more people to have no other option than to eat these foods.
That's not very optimistic. Kristen, do you think in capitalism there is an ability for the small and local to compete with the big and industrial?
It depends on how many people are supporting it. The more people you can get in an economy locally, especially to buy that food, to support the farmers, I think you can see a shift. But I also think that comes with knowledge. Knowledge is power. And in order to get a significant amount of people aware of what's going on in our food system, we really have to share that knowledge, and it's going to take a paradigm shift. I mean, we live in a bubble here. I often forget this is not the norm.
Yeah, here being in... Well, wait a minute. You know, people talk about... talking from Santa Cruz, California. We're probably at the heart of alternative agriculture in the United States right here. And yet, in my hometown of Billings, Montana, there is a thriving farmers market that's literally bringing life back to downtown. So why can't this happen elsewhere? Why does it have to be just here? Anna?
I think that it can happen elsewhere, and I think it really is, because you just see these young people who are at universities like UCSC, and they are learning the principles of agroecology, they're learning about permaculture, and then they're going out into the world. And some of them will stay in Santa Cruz, but a lot of them are moving other places. And there's a lot of people who are not learning this at university. They're learning based on whatever experiences they've had, whatever, everyone has that aha moment where they realize that what we are doing, the industrialization of our food systems, are not a good thing.
Okay. And what if this actually happens? What if you actually have this kind of whole revolution of the fresh and local, and people in Duluth, Minnesota start going down to the farmer's market instead of the supermarket? Instead of buying the Kellogg's Frosted Flakes, they start buying homemade granola. That's a huge threat. I mean, that is a huge threat to that industrial paradigm. And do you think they're just going to sit back and say, oh, they're buying fresh and local, that's so nice of them? Do you think they're going to actually say that?
No, but I mean, I don't know what what can they do at that point. If you're making your own personal decisions within your own life, spending your money at a farmer's market, it's not like they can follow you around and force you to buy certain things. I think if you don't support those companies, you essentially cut off the blood supply to them being able to thrive.
Sure, and if you cut off that blood supply to those large corporations, you think they're just going to be nice and go away?
No, I don't think so.
Let me ask you this then. What if they decide that fresh local food is dangerous and not safe?
Then we're going to have to get together, power with for the people and to support the local food. We can't let the government make decisions like that for us.
Who's running the food safety division of the Food and Drug Administration?
Who's it, Michael Taylor from Monsanto?
Do you think he wants you to eat fresh local food?
No, not unless it's genetically modified.
How will you stand up to an industrial paradigm that has the money to make the rules?
Well, I think that is what our generation and older generations and generations that are going to come are going to have to figure out, and we're starting on that path. And a lot of it is going to have to be a cultural change in which we try to redefine what we mean by living well, in which we're thinking that we need, you know, you can just, if you're sustaining yourself and you're getting really good food, that's a lot better than quantity. That's a lot better than going to Costco and buying a triple pack of gigantic boxes of Frosted Flakes.
Mm-hmm. But what if we forget how significant it is to eat a fresh, local, vine-ripened tomato?
Our bodies will always remind us.
Ah. Even if we don't know. What if we forget entirely, though, and the only thing left is a package of Soylent designed to taste like that fresh local tomato? What do you think out there, folks? Are these ladies going to be able to find the food they want to eat in the future? Or will it be that box of Soylent? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. It is the last final few minutes of our intern's presentation here, and hope you'll join us with that. Right, do stay tuned, right back. So I heard a story from John Kagebine, who is running the Santa Cruz County Fair here in Santa Cruz, California, and he was talking about getting the fairgrounds ready for the fair. And he had a bunch of juvenile delinquents out. I don't know what they call them these days, probably behavior-challenged kids or something like that, children. But they were out cleaning up the fairgrounds, getting it ready for the fair, and he happened to notice that they all had disappeared. And he went looking for them and found all the kids gathered around the 4-H pens where they were doing something, and he ran up to find out what was going on. And lo and behold, these kids who were, you know, one step away from jail were all sitting there staring at a young 4-H gal milking a cow. And he realized then that they were staring at this scene in total amazement, because they were realizing for the first time where the milk came from. So it seems like so many of us now are forgetting where food comes from, what food tastes like, what it means to eat a real meal, that Soylent is just another food. And if we all get to that state, will we ever make it back to real food? Anna?
Well, I think that's why it's really important to make sure that those of us who do know, that we don't forget, that we keep asking for what we know is right and what we want, and that we use the position that we're in of sort of relative food privilege, and that we know that, to pass that on to other people, to people who are in communities where they don't have access to the fresh food, where they may have never had a fresh tomato, as you described it. And we need to make sure that we're sharing this, and that we try and make sure everyone knows what we're fighting for.
Well, Kristen, if you're running around telling people about real food, are you not going to be a threat to those people who want us to eat Soylent?
I'm sure anybody who's speaking on behalf of Fresh Whole Foods is, not the store, but the food. But knowledge is power. That's just what it all comes down to. And I can shout it from the rooftops, but until each person individually finds that within themselves and desires that. And so I really suggest, don't just go buy something because it's organic, or, you know, don't just call it local. Understand what that means. What, you know, have that, give that a personal meaning for yourself, so you really understand the benefits so much more. And then you will be able to share with other people on a whole other level why this is such an important thing.
Anna, what do you want your children to be eating in the future?
I want them to be eating food that will help their... Well, there's only one. I want him, my son, who's 3 years old, to eat food that is going to help him grow, that is going to help him become everything that he should be. And I think that's going to be organic and local.
Kristen?
Yeah, I'm with Anna. Just whole, healthy, organic foods to help us all have long, healthy, thriving lives.
Well, folks, what do you think out there? Do you think these ladies should have that food in their future? Or do you think they should be satisfied with eating Soylent, that ever so handy stuff that comes in a box? And that, who needs food, right, if you have Soylent? Thank you for tuning in. And remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.